Welcome to Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Ben. Join me as I chat with big thinkers, leaders, and decision makers in the world of tech. We talk about developments and big movements in the tech industry, along with stories, anecdotes, and advice for your own career. If you like the show and would like to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Welcome to the show, guys. Today we're joined by Lisa Allen, who is Head of Data and Analytical Services at Ordnance Survey. Great to have you on, Lisa. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, it's great being here.
Cool. I think just to get us started, could you give us a bit of insight into your role there at Ordnance Survey?
Yeah, no problem. So you said I'm the Head of Data and Analytical Services at OS. And what that means is I really lead a team of data experts, so the location data experts. And our mission is to enable our customers to trust, find and use Ordnance Survey data. So we want them really to connect through the language of location so they get greater insights, they make better decisions and they get better outcomes. So I think we're working with customers on a daily basis really to make sure that our data is meeting their requirements.
Excellent. Could you tell us a bit about what Ordnance Survey does?
In a nutshell, we provide the most authoritative and trusted location data for Great Britain.
Wow.
So we do this for government, but we also do it for the private sector. We work with a network of partners as well who are licensed our data to enable others to access it. And we have lots of range of products and services. Do you want to give you a taste of some of our products and services?
Please do.
Yeah. So we have ones like addressing. So address-based premium is one of our most prestigious products, I think, really, and most used. I think it gives you the most up-to-date, accurate information about addresses, properties and land. We have other products, things like height and imagery. So this gives you detailed terrain of Great Britain. I suppose if you're a walker like me, that's really important, so you know where the hills are.
Yes.
There's other things we've got like buildings and height. So this shows the height of properties, which helps you manage your assets or help you visualise in urban density. And then we've got other ones like network data. And when I say network, I'm talking about highways of Great Britain, yep. Or I'm talking about the paths in urban networks, in urban areas. So you can see actually there's quite a range of things that we do. But it's not just about the data, actually. We offer our services internationally. So we work with many other countries, helping them increase their geospatial maturity or helping them collect and manage that data. And I suppose one of the other things we do, and I suppose it's close to my heart with some of these things, is we offer resources to schools because actually there's free resources for teachers to access for the next generation of geographers out there.
Amazing. I mean, it's interesting how you mentioned schools then, because I remember even when I was back at school, I remember Ordnance Survey then, and it's a name that everybody is familiar with. Do you think it's misunderstood in this day and age? Because it's definitely branched out a hell of a lot since then.
Definitely. I think you really pointed out, I think, where people have seen us probably in the past, yeah, with the maps. So I think we're really known for that. And that's brilliant because they're brilliant. And I rely on them at least every week when I go out. But that's not the only thing we do. Mm. We do so much more. So I do think we're misunderstood. And if you think, well, we're more than 200 years old, and
wow.
I suppose I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you think in digital terms, that makes us like a dinosaur, you know. It's interesting, but we've continued to evolve, so we haven't stopped there. So we now manage GB's most richest location database, which is really a national asset for the whole of the country. And I'll give you a bit of a flavour of what that means. So we do, we make about 20,000 changes a day.
No way.
20,000 changes a day to a database with over 500 million geographical features. That's for England, Scotland and Wales. So
it
gives you a bit of, it's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's anything from rivers to buildings and so much more. And that data is used by around about 5,000 government users, as well as obviously the private sector. So we're really a part of the digital transformation that's going on in the UK right now.
With the digital transformation, do you remember when that happened?
OS has always been quite ahead of the curve. We've always been evolving. So in the 70s, we were digitising our archives, so for our paper records. I mean, some people are still working on that today, aren't they? So.
Yeah.
the transformation, I think, is when you hear, especially when COVID related, how important data has been in this current crisis. It's not a day goes past when people are now talking about how important the data is. So the transformation has been happening for a while, over a number of years, but actually I think it's starting to accelerate now as we all realise the importance of the data.
Absolutely. Like you were saying, in this day and age, data is so important. But how important do you think location-specific data is, and what impact can this have on society?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I think location data and arrest location data is absolutely fundamental. It's relied on by us all, and most of us don't even know it. So, for example, if you were to call the fire service or an ambulance, it's more than likely it's OS data that's going to help them to find you. If you report a gas leak or a water leak, then the utilities will be using that location data to plan the improvements, and that's more than likely OS data. It's the same for planning applications, for buying a house, collecting the bins. You know, it's absolutely in the fabric of everything we do right across the country. So when you ask me how important do I think it is, I think it's absolutely fundamental.
So it seems like there's definitely an evolving need for spatial data, especially in this day and age.
Definitely, yes.
Do you have any kind of real world cases? I know you mentioned a few there, but do you have any more of where this is really being leaned upon as very, very important, should I say?
Yeah, well, I think it's actually the evolution of what's happening with location data. I think it's creeping in without you even noticing it. So this morning, only my phone was telling me where my car is parked.
Yeah.
How long it would take me to get to my office, which obviously I'm not going to today because we're working at home. But so it's already starting to become a very intricate part of what we do. And in the future, you can see that actually connecting people to the geography is going to become more important. So you can see a place where we'll get to where your heating turns on before you get home. We're already starting to see some of that. Your lights are coming on. It's all of the location data that's enabling that. And then you start looking about self-driving cars. And that's really taking the need for more granular location data a lot further. And if you think, it's quite interesting when you think about where OS has come from. So we used to record data, and it used to be that the saying was that there's anything you could hide behind and shoot from. So we'd only record it if it was 30 centimetres from the ground.
Wow.
So obviously our military background, that was what was important 200 years ago.
Wow, that's great. That's crazy.
It is, yeah. But that's no good for self-driving cars if you're going to hit a curb or so the evolving use case is there. So the more granular and detailed data is definitely needed, and also it comes into predictive modeling and analytics. So we talk about digital twins. I don't know if you heard of the term digital twin.
It rings a bell.
Yeah, it's quite alien to quite a lot of people, but it's just a data or digital version of the real world. So it's just taking all that data about the real world and having a digital version. And you can see that in the future, for example, for a new housing estate, if you take a digital version of it and then put it into the actual digital twin, you can have a look at the impact on the traffic, the schools, on the local infrastructure. You can do all that. And that's before even a single brick is laid. So you'll be able to do so much more. And it's about the connection between multiple data sets from multiple industries all coming together. And it also, when you think about sensors that are all coming online and real time, that just shows the speed of the data that is all coming together to show that evolving use case from the just record the static thing you can sit, you know, the hide behind and shoot from.
Incredible. I mean, it's evolved a lot in very recent years as well, especially with the rise in technology, and it really is a part of everybody's everyday life. Where do you think it could be seen to be used in the future?
So I think those are the sorts of future use cases. I think it's going to be fundamental in all of them. I was only listening to a podcast the other day where they were talking about that cars won't be needed in cities anymore, that actually you won't probably own your car, you'll call one. So you can imagine that these cars all then go out to their own car parks out of the city, and then you can just call them when you need them in. So you can just see that it's going to make a very, very different world.
Yeah.
And the data we're collecting actually on the location will be very different. I mean, well, you need all the roundabouts, the traffic lights, when you've got all those self-driving cars. Things are changing, they'll change fast. So, yeah, it's definitely evolving.
To me, that sounds terrifying. I can't imagine that world, but it would be amazing. I mean,
That's bonkers. I'll have to share with you the podcast.
Yeah, please do. In terms of COVID-19, every business around the globe has been affected by this to varying degrees. Has Ordnance Survey been affected by the pandemic?
Yeah, so we've been impacted like so many. So we've all been working at home, and I just think we're really, really lucky. We're in a digital business, which means actually we've been continuing to work from home. So I think that's been brilliant and really, really good for us. It's also meant, because the weather's been so good, actually we've been able to capture more aerial imagery.
Wow.
which has been a bonus and good for us too. But the main thing we've been doing actually has been helping the response for government. So we've done nearly 200 requests for mapping for emergencies. So we've got this service that we offer to government, which means that during a crisis, they can call on us to help them. So we would have helped previously in like flooding crises and things like that. So we've been helping local authorities, emergency services and central government with answering some of those questions. So the sort of things we've been asked to help with is about matching data and technical support, really, you know, linking households to the nearest healthcare centres, or, you know, making sure the addresses are correct and address matching to make sure the letters get out to the most vulnerable. And it's meant for us to actually look at our data, how granular it is. We've been able to pull out the location and addresses of things like care homes, pharmacies, GP practices, supermarkets, transport hub and networks, and even green spaces. So where can people go to exercise? So there's been so many use cases really that have come out through this. And we've also adapted as well, I suppose, because most of our stuff in mapping for emergencies is for government. But in this crisis, what we've seen is lots of private companies helping the government with the response. So we've adapted and we brought in a new COVID license, a temporary license, which enabled those private companies then to who were helping the government to access the data on the same conditions that the government was accessing it. So we've really adapted and really quickly, actually. It didn't take us long to turn it around. So we weren't focusing on, you know, everybody working at home, but actually how we could also help in the crisis. And I think it's been huge. It's been a huge collaboration across multiple sectors, I think. But what shone for me is how that granular and authoritative data is where Ordnance Surveys played a really big role, because a lot of the questions that are coming up in the media is the question of where. So, you know, where are the care homes? Where's the outbreaks? And I think it's going to be, as well, when we're going forward, geography is going to be playing a big part, and where you think about the local lockdowns, what you're seeing next.
That's amazing to hear. I mean, it's so useful for, it seems like, everybody, really, in all different ways. It's amazing. I'm quite intrigued by the way you physically get the mapping. I mean, I'm a complete novice. I know pretty much nothing about this. So very briefly, could you kind of explain how you get this data? Because you were mentioning aerial views and things like that. Could you just briefly explain what the process is?
It depends on the type of data we're capturing. Mm-hmm. So we do have the aerial imagery. So that will be LIDAR, where we'll have planes flying over the country and taking photographs of those. But we also have the 200 surveyors on the ground who will be there collecting their data with their GPS and marking out. I got to go out with a surveyor not that long ago, actually. It was amazing. So I've actually put some data on the map, which I'm always going to be proud of. But it's absolutely meticulous. So they'll sit there and they will pinpoint like the corners of the buildings. They'll mark them up so they were absolutely defined as accurate. You know, if you get in the shadow of the building, then it stops the link through the satellite and you can lose it. So it's the amount of work that's done. We'll be following the curb lines. That's what our surveyors are out there doing, capturing all that data. But we also get it from third parties too. So if it's not a specialist of ours, then we'll work with others to make sure we're bringing their data too, and then join that with ours and bring it all together.
It's such a huge task, isn't it? And it's got to constantly be updated.
Yep, that's right. So if you think about how the environment around you is changing all the time, it is, you know, every time a housing estate goes up, every time something is removed from the landscape, it's a constantly moving picture. So that means we're constantly out there renewing our capture and making sure we're updating it.
It's crazy because, you know, I live in Manchester, and I'll visit home for maybe a week and then I'll go back to Manchester and there'll be a new massive building that's just popped up. It's amazing. And that would just have to go be surveyed straight away, will it?
So there'll be timelines and how often we'll get the capture. So we'll have detailed data on when you can expect it to appear.
Okay.
Because obviously it's a cyclical thing
yeah.
that we're going. And depending on the feature, we'll have different timelines for when we're updating each of those. But yeah, the idea is to do it as quick as possible. But you can imagine that, covering the whole of England, Wales and Scotland,
yeah.
then yeah, it keeps us busy, which is really, really good. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of logistics involved as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And then also then supplying the data to people and how they want the data. And that's been changing too, I think, over time. So previously we would be really looking at giving data products to people. So putting together all the things we know. So we created, I think, Master Map, which is the biggest master map of the country nearly 20 years ago. So actually which is phenomenal. But now we're looking at actually how do we make sure that data is served in more granular fashions? How do we make sure you don't have to take the whole of the product, you can just take pieces what you want. So we're looking at how you can use big data and transform our data. So we're constantly evolving. I think that's one thing that I love about Ordnance Surveys, we're constantly evolving.
That's brilliant. How can you access this data?
So you're best to go to our website, which is ordnancesurvey.co.uk. And on there, you'll find lots of information. So it was on the 1st of July, we actually launched our new OS Data Hub. So you can find lots of API links on there to all our products and services. And you'll find things on there like our open data. So on the 1st of July, we launched our unique property reference number. So every property in the country has a unique number, which is phenomenal when you want to link it together with other data, and that's an open data product that's on there. But you also find our premium data, like a address-based premium. So there's lots of things. So I definitely advise you to go to ordnancesurvey.co.uk to have a little look and see what you can find, because it's a gold mine.
It is. I mean, I was on the website earlier on today, and it came up with running maps and all sorts. And I thought that's really useful because I've just been running around my local park in a loop, and it's been quite boring, really.
So, sorry, just chuckling. Yeah, no, that does sound quite boring.
Yeah, it is. It's extremely boring. So from now on, I think I'll be definitely using your maps for my running routes.
Yeah, definitely. You can have a look as well. So there's an app you can download as well, an Ordnance Survey app. So you can show that there's free as well as paid for parts of that too. So you can have a little look. And I always use it for footpaths because it's amazing when you're out and you can have a little look and you can just explore somewhere new. You just get the local footpath and away you go, and you can link it all together. It's brilliant.
So we've been talking about the government work and how data is used in other businesses. And could you tell us about some of the other work, maybe internationally, how it's used?
Yes, certainly. So we're working with over 15 countries now internationally, because on the survey, you can see from all the work we've been doing, we're considered world-leading geospatially advanced nation. So others want to learn from us, and we can go out there and help them through consultancy or through helping them collect a national base map. So we've been doing this with a number of countries and for a number of years now, and it really shows how advanced we are. And I think what it means is for them is that we can unlock value for them. We can almost shorten their journey for getting to that expertise that we've got. So by working with them and helping them on data standards or data collection or how you manage so much data over time, I think it really helps them unlock the power of location data quicker.
In the past, tech has been a very male-dominated industry. Can you see this beginning to shift with more women in tech these days?
I'd really like to say yes, but actually we just did some recruitment recently and we only had, out of 40-odd applications, only two women coming forward. So that still says to me we still have a way to go with it. I do think in data, I think you see more women. In IT, probably less so has been my general perception. I think what we need to do is more work with the schools and with the universities and with female role models to show what you can do out there, to show actually it is a job for women. It's a really, really good job for women, as well as men, as well as all. So I think that we need to do more work on that. And I don't think it's probably shifting fast enough, but I think we need to do some more work.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of that change has to come from school time, before GCSE even. Because I heard that there is a drop-off point where young girls are getting really interested in IT and tech. And then it almost happens at GCSE level where they drop off their interest and then they don't go back to it. I think the female role models is a really important thing for young girls at GCSE level. And it's kind of future-proofing the tech industry, isn't it? If you get them involved at a young age, it's future-proofing it for 10 years' time.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely fundamental because actually you're right, the STEM subjects, the girls do drop off. But actually, if you think about where the tech industry is going with algorithms and data and the bias that's in them, what you're getting is the algorithms will always amplify a bias. So if you've got all male teams or all the same type of team working on something, then you'll miss something big and you'll get more and more discrimination, because actually you won't have that diversity in those teams to actually pick it up. So I think actually it's more dangerous if we don't encourage girls and diverse communities and diverse backgrounds into tech and data, because actually as we rely more and more on the machines, then they will respond in a certain way and it's not going to be the way we'd want. So definitely we need to look at that and work on it.
Yeah, and I find it really surprising because it's the young kids who are really involved in tech these days, and it's just surprising that they're not kind of really wanting to be involved in it. I still think it's quite archaic that shift hasn't happened yet,
and it's probably what's there for them. So I have twin boys who are 14, so absolutely adore the Xbox, and the majority of the friends they play with are majority male, so some of those games are not encouraging girls into them. There are definitely a few that play with them, but it is majority male, so the games are not appealing to that broader community. I mean, I remember back in the 80s when I had my Spectrum ZX playing Treasure Island. I was more encouraged to do that, but I think I was just naturally a STEM subject. I loved it. I always loved it. So it's how do you get them really early? I think that's got to be the key for us, isn't it? You can't let them put that off. It's something that they don't want to do. It needs to be up there as a job prospect, as something they can enjoy and take forward and have the confidence to do it. A lot of things with women is about having the confidence to do it, because men seem to be a lot more confident, just generalisation, than women. And I think we need to stand up and say what stuff we enjoy.
Definitely, definitely. I'm interested in the culture of Ordnance Survey. What's that like? Because the cultures in tech industries vary hugely, because there's tech startups and they're very small and very, very different to, say, tech giants, for example. So what's the culture like at Ordnance Survey?
It's actually like a big family, actually. Coming to Ordnance Survey, it's not just about the work. It's about the people. So we've got some great running clubs, we've got sewing clubs, we've got cycling clubs. You know, it is like a big family. So we work hard, but we play hard together. So it is really inclusive as far as that's concerned. And yeah, the people are absolutely amazing. And it's an amazing place to work. And we've just updated our values, actually. And the first thing we put was making sure that, you know, customer first, really putting that customer focus. It needs to be at the heart of everything we do. But our other values are like seize the day. So, you know, we must seize the moment and then collaborate. So thrive together. So I think, and then stay ahead is one of our values too. So we don't lie on our laurels. We need to always be thinking what comes next. So I think that sums up the culture really of Ordnance Survey, that we are a big family, but also we are looking to the future and making sure we're doing what our customers need.
Yeah, brilliant. And I personally think that culture is, I'd say it's probably the most important part of a business, especially in tech, when you have to be forward thinking.
Yeah, and because it's difficult, isn't it? Because actually not everything you'll be thinking for the future will work, so you also have to be able to fail fast and that to be okay. And when you're an organization that relies on really authoritative data, which means collection, the whole machine that goes on it, And then you've got the other aspect of innovation and pushing forward. We need to make sure that you focus on the delivery, but don't undermine the innovation. So, yeah, separating those communities is an important part for us to make sure you can have those blue sky thoughts. And actually, sometimes they're not going to work and you will throw them out. And that's fine, because it's better to have it fail early than try to make something work that's not going to.
Completely agree. And I've spoken to a few leaders in tech recently, and they kind of follow the same ethos, really. And it's really great to see. I think that might wrap us up. Or I do have a wildcard question, if you're interested.
Go on then, what's a wildcard?
Well, I've got a few, so I've got to choose one. I'll try and be nice. What do you think the most overrated piece of tech is?
Oh, you see, I think there's quite a lot of tech that's overrated, because I've been known to say that actually data matures like fine wine, but technology matures like fish. So I think for me, it's always been about the data, because the tech is just the enabler.
Perfect. I think maybe just to finish up on, what's the future of Ordnance Survey? We've been touching on it, but where can you really see it going?
I think when you think about Ordnance Survey, it's been such an important part of our country's past, and I think it will form an absolutely fundamental part of the future. I think as we are seeing more and more need for these data and services at a more granular level and connected, I think we'll be there. We'll be certainly there. That's where we're thinking. So I think we'll do what we've done for 100 of years, you know, keep evolving, keep responding and being recognised as world leaders in geospatial data and services to make sure that location insight is there for positive impact. So I think we're definitely looking at those use cases going forward. And one thing we don't do is sit still.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you've enjoyed it, feel free to give us a follow on SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify. See you next time.